This is Expanded States. Join us for a deep exploration in expanding awareness, opening the heart, and journeying beyond boundaries. Listen in for illuminating conversation and mind-expanding topics like psychedelics, mindfulness, breathwork, nature immersion, sound healing, and so much more. Welcome to the Expanded States podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Gale, and I am very lucky to be spending a little time today with Dr. Dave Rabin, who is a neuroscientist, board-certified psychiatrist, health tech entrepreneur, and inventor who's been studying the impact of chronic stress in humans for more than a decade. He's the chief medical officer and co-founder at Apollo Neuroscience, which has developed the first scientifically validated wearable technology that actively improves energy, focus, and relaxation using a novel touch therapy that signals safety to the brain. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks so much for having me, Michelle. It's a pleasure to be here with you. And I love the work that you've been doing in this space. So I am really glad we were able to do this together.
Thank you. Well, I would consider myself a power user of Apollo for sure. I have it on right now. I don't ever take it off for the most part. If I don't have it off, it's one of those things like you forgot your phone. I forgot my Apollo. So I've been using it for well over a year consistently. And the first thing I noticed when using it was that my sleep scores on my Oura Ring improved. And the thing that I noticed the most was that, you know, if I don't get enough sleep, maybe I only got 5.5 hours of sleep, which is not enough for me. I need closer to 7 hours. It used to be that my deep sleep and my REM was wrecked. And as soon as I started wearing the Apollo, those scored almost never, even if I get 4.5 hours of sleep, I still get enough deep sleep and REM sleep and don't feel wrecked. And the other big one was last year, because I'd only been wearing it for some time. You know, I helped to MC the Wisdom 2.0 conference every year, and it destroys me, you know, after all those days and being on. And and I wore the Apollo like in my pants or on my ankle the whole time, and I kept it going the whole time. And I came to your house for a gathering right afterwards, and I was fine. So those are my two big stories of the Apollo. And I wonder if that's very common, if you hear that commonly from others.
Yeah, it is. It is pretty common. And I personally use, Catherine and I both, Catherine being my wife and the CEO and co-founder of Apollo, we both use it for socializing when we're exhausted and for public speaking and interviews and things like that, which we find ourselves doing a lot of. So it's really, really helpful to just keep us bright and energized and like present and in, you know, the space with other people when we're tired, which when you're tired, you have a tendency to kind of go inward and not be social and bubbly. So it's been really helpful for that. And I tell this story a lot, which we don't have to get into right now, but about how in the first 3 months of using Apollo in 2018, I still had public speaking anxiety, and I actually trained myself completely out of it with the mindfulness in 3 months with the mindfulness enhancing features of the Apollo, which has helped me be more present when I was on stage and recognize that I wasn't being present before and that I have the opportunity to do that now. And as soon as I recognized the opportunity, it was like, bam, okay, I am in control of the situation, not the other way around. And I think that really helps us to effectively like align our energy in our body so that when we're doing something, we're fully in it, doing it, we're fully present, and including sleep, right? And if you're trying to fall asleep, but your attention is on regretting all the things that you should have done better the past day or the past week, or thinking about all the things that, you know, your future casting that are stressful, that are to come in the next day, then you're not actually being present with the act of what we're supposed to be doing right now, which is just winding down and calming down and falling asleep. And we have to feel safe to fall asleep. So if there's any, sleep is one of our most physically, if not our most physically vulnerable state of being in any time we're alive, especially REM and deep sleep, which are, you know, where we're like often physically, mentally, emotionally paralyzed. We can't respond to threat when we're in those states. So the body shuts down access to deep and REM sleep states, which are our deepest states of physical recovery when we don't feel safe. Even when we don't feel safe because we're worried about stuff we have to do tomorrow, that is enough. And so It's through these practices that we call like somatic techniques, which is what Apollo fits into, which delivers soothing, gentle vibration to the body, that anyone who's listening who has an iPhone can actually feel it on their iPhone by downloading the Apollo app. You can get a little demo now. But that feeling of those gentle vibrations was designed to soothe the body, and to soothe the body by bringing us into our ideal breath rhythm and increase our vagal tone. And when you just deliver just a little bit of soothing vibration to the body, whether it's coming from an Apollo or from, you know, you're holding your favorite animal or a loved one or whatever it is, we naturally feel safer and we're able to wind down into deep and REM sleep states, or we can ramp up for a public speaking presentation or whatever it is. Wow. We can rally. So that's why this works so well in these different contexts. And, you know, music has been understood, music you can hear has been understood to do this for many generations. So this is just a new version of that that you can wear.
Wow. Wow. I hadn't really connected it to feeling safe. But that makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense to me. And I wonder if you could back up a little, and I'm sure you've been asked this question a million times, but I don't know the story. And I'm really curious of the origin story of like, what happened? Like, what was the reason you and your wife decided to build this, to create it? I imagine it's a good story.
Yeah, it's definitely a fun story. I was working as a psychiatrist and a neuroscientist at the University mm-hmm. of Pittsburgh and the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. And I was treating a lot of veterans who had severe treatment refractory or resistant PTSD. So these are people who fall into a category of people who are amongst the most highly physically and mentally trained individuals in the entire country. They have gone through basic training. They've often been deployed into battle conflict zones. They have to deal with tremendous amounts of stress. And yet they return home, and most, if not all of them, wind up having symptoms of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, or traumatic brain injury, or both, that are not addressed by our current medical system effectively. So what I mean by that is, if you look at the statistics of veterans in particular as one patient population that we as psychiatrists deal with, if you are a veteran who's been diagnosed with PTSD, over 70% of those people will never actually achieve freedom from their symptoms. With all the best treatments we have available in the standard Western medical model, over 70% of those people never get better to the point where they can stop taking medication. And that's a really crappy number. Yeah. Right? Like, we need to be doing better, and especially for these people. And it really made me think when I was working in the clinic that, and treating these patients and seeing the challenges we were facing, you know, when you start to see that with all the best tools that you're handed, it's like, imagine if you were a mechanic and your job is to repair a certain kind of car, and 70% of the time or more that car comes in, you can't fix it. You're going to have a lot of unhappy customers, right? And they still have to pay you for that time, and you're not, and your car is still broken. There's going to be a lot of unhappy customers. So, you know, imagine this times 100 with PTSD. And so, you know, we really went back to the drawing board and started to ask harder questions in my research group, which was, you know, is it possible that we have this idea of what PTSD is wrong, right? Like, maybe we're approaching this incorrectly. Maybe there's other stuff going on here that we're missing that's under the surface, and maybe we could be doing a better job. So let's investigate that. And so from there, I just started to look at everything under the sun that had ever been historically used to treat trauma. And I found natural stuff, which was soothing touch, soothing music, just generally soothing sensations, service animals, empathic listening, like genuine eye-to-eye contact, therapeutic conversations, like we had with our patients in the office were really helpful, regular amounts of exercise, right? Deep breathing techniques, all of the stuff was really, really helpful, but hard to do, requires a lot of engagement. Then there was another category we found, which was electronic and technology-based solutions. So this would be like vagal nerve stimulators, electrical stimulators of different parts of the body that are activating the vagus nerve, the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the main, vagus nerve is our main nerve that governs all recovery in the body. And it turns out that soothing touch, soothing music, yoga, mindfulness, meditation, in of, you know, all of these things, they all activate the vagus nerve. So now there's two things, two camps that I found, and they're all activating the same part of the body, and it's the recovery part, which we know, which we knew at that time was decreased in people who had PTSD across the board. They have low activity in their parasympathetic recovery nervous system and high activity in their fight or flight stress response system. And these two systems are constantly competing for resources like blood. And there's only so much blood to go around. So when you're stressed, all your recovery parts of your body are not getting that blood. So that's like your sleep, your digestion, your immunity, your reproductive system, all the stuff, your creativity systems, your empathy, all that stuff just gets deprioritized in terms of resources because all your blood's going to your skeletal muscles and your heart and lungs and your motor cortex of your brain to get you out of a threatening situation. And then the third camp that we found that was really interesting was the MDMA-assisted therapy camp, which was at that time, back in 2012 through 2016, showing, and still is to this day, showing the best results that we've ever seen to treat PTSD, even in veterans, that out of any discovery we've ever found in the history of psychiatry, which is really astounding, right? So that's like, that's just, it was just an astonishingly good results, like 88% response rates in these, in the same patient population, and 67% of people 1 year out were no longer meeting diagnostic criteria for PTSD after just three doses of medicine, of MDMA, and 42 hours of psychotherapy over 12 weeks. So this was unheard of in our field to see that kind of transformation from our patients. So I started to talk to people in the field. This is fast forward to 2016. I was talking to people like Rick Doblin and my colleague at Yale, Ben Kelmendi, and a number of other people, and trying to understand how MDMA was working. And so I read everything under the sun and tried to figure out, you know, if this is really resulting in the healing of some of these folks that are most challenging to treat patients, we need to figure out how it works, right? We have to figure out how it works, because if we can figure out how it works, then maybe we can replicate some of the benefits without drugs. And so when I read all the papers and I did my own MDMA therapy training, and I mapped out the neural pathways that were known about how MDMA works compared to how soothing touch and soothing music works, and natural techniques like breathing and biofeedback, and then looking at how vagal nerve stimulation works and the electrical stimulation stuff, it turns out that they all activate the parasympathetic nervous system at some point in their journey. And that activation of that system is surrounding the feeling of safety.
Wow.
So seeing that, I thought, okay, if safety is the common theme,
yeah,
and we know from animal studies that trauma is trained fear response, right? Mm-hmm. And we know from animal studies that you can extinguish a fear response with safety in animals, then perhaps we can do the same thing in humans.
Wow.
And so we started to evaluate if you could really retrain the body. And we, you know, you're very familiar with like cognitive behavioral therapy with prolonged exposure, right? And that is the same thing. It's exposing people to the things that they're afraid of that have traumatized them in a safe environment so that they can reassociate that thing with safety rather than threat. And all of a sudden their symptoms go away because they have created a new learning pattern around this thing used to scare me, but now I know it's safe, so I'm not worried about it anymore. And so we basically thought, well, if safety is the key, then maybe we can deliver some of the benefits of safety to people on the go using the sense of touch, which is immediate, instantaneous safety, right? Like we know, you know it from mother holding a baby, right? It's nonverbal, it's nearly instantaneous, and it causes almost immediate changes in the way that we feel when we're receiving it. And so as I started to see that, I was like, okay, if all of these are targeting the same place, perhaps we can create a wearable that actually delivers soothing touch to the body. And then Catherine helped us raise the initial $500,000 in grant funding from the university and from other grants that helped us to do the research. And we found that, yes, in fact, this was these specific vibration patterns that you feel coming out of the Apollo or coming out of your iPhone, if you're trying that right now, can actually increase heart rate variability, increase vagal nerve tone, increase recovery nervous system activity by reminding us that we're safe enough to recover and we're safe enough to breathe at the recovery breath rhythm. And that kicked off everything else.
Wow. Incredible. And I love about the Apollo something very practical that you can decide how much you want to feel it. You know, there's like zero to, you know, whatever it might be. And I know I keep it on quite low. And I'm not sure if I'm going to pause for 1 second. I'm babysitting a dog and it's sleeping and dreaming. Hang on. Hang on 1 second. I'm pausing.
No worries.
Let me just pause the. Okay. I'm appreciating the Apollo, just a really basic feature it has that you can have it on low or that you can keep it on high. Like I like it on low. My son, my 17-year-old son, he wants it on 100%. He wants to feel it completely. And I love that. And I'm curious. So I'm curious on the combinations. Like I know I experiment with my Apollo doing a lot of other things, like doing meditation. I know I'm assuming you've combined it with your ketamine therapy. You know, I'm curious to hear about that, to like understand, you know, the different ways people are combining the Apollo that others might be able to experiment with that are listening. And, you know, some of the more unique ways that you might suggest people play with their Apollo.
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, I think when I thought about my patients who are struggling and, you know, these folks with traumatic brain injuries, you know, PTSD, and I thought about what they were struggling with coming back from conflict zones to civilian life, going from being in wartime to working a day job again, right? And then having to change their entire routine and be surrounded by people who were unfamiliar with their story and their background. And I started to see what they had in common with the rest of us when we were challenged with stress. What became very, very clear, and I think the literature around neuroscience and psychology really supports this now, which is that transitions in our lives are the hardest things for us as humans. It doesn't mean that we can't overcome them, but we need to train ourselves to overcome them smoothly and not resist the transition. So to give you an example, you don't have to be coming back from war and going back to civilian life. A transition can simply be, I was sleeping and now I need to be awake and go to work or take care of my kids or whatever it is, right? That is a major energy transition. I was unconscious, now I'm conscious and I have all these responsibilities I have to take care of, right? Similarly, I was at work and now I have to go back and hang out with my family and I have to be calm and not in work mode when I'm with my family so that I'm present and focused and, you know, relaxed. Or I was stressed and now I need to meditate. That's a transition. I was meditating, now I need to go back to work, another transition, and I was awake, now I need to go back to sleep, right? And so that requires to make those transitions with life, it requires an energy state change, and it requires a mood change to some extent, and a thinking change. So it's really like all parts of us have to shift even just slightly to get us from point A to point B. And if we are in any way resistant to that change, if we push back on it, it can cause a lot of pain and suffering. And Bruce Lee talks about this, right? Like, this is one of his most famous quotes that I love is, you know, he said, like, be like water. When water is in a cup, it becomes the cup. When water is in a stream, it becomes the stream. It doesn't ask, why am I a stream now, right? It's just a stream and it's flowing, right? We ask most of the time, why me? Why do I have to be in a cup right now, right? Yeah. And I think that those kinds of questions might be useful at certain times, but they're generally not useful most of the time. And if we ask them and ruminate on them, then we can get fixated and waste a bunch of time and energy thinking about the wrong things where we really just need to be a cup right now, right? Mm-hmm. So I think what Apollo is really helpful with is these transitions, because if transitions are the most stressful things in our lives, going from A to B or B to C, then what if you could just calm yourself to more easily switch from A to B? And would that actually make it easier? And it turns out it does. And that we know that from generations of traditional martial arts training and Eastern medicine practices and tribal medicine practices and modern biofeedback, yoga, breathwork. All of these techniques are about just being present with yourself while you're going from state A to state B to state C. And when people are calm and relaxed in those transition points, they transition much, much better. So I'll give you the example of psychedelic medicine, which I think is really interesting because we don't talk about this that much or at least I do, but a lot of other people don't. So ketamine, when it's used for depression in the clinic, is used at a low dose, much lower, like 1/10 of the dose that we use in the operating room for anesthesia. And it is usually right around the threshold of where people start to achieve a psychedelic effect. It's not like fully blasting you off, because ketamine, if you dose it too high, reduces memory of the experience. And we want people to remember the experience. So we don't want to give you too much. We want to give you just enough where you start to feel a little bit altered or expanded, as we might say in this podcast, right? Yes. So, and what ketamine does is it puts you into this non-judgmental observer mind state. And that state is one in which we're able to, with a completely quiet mind, like imagine somebody just pressed pause on your brain so that you were doing this before and now it's just paused, stopped. And then that stuff, whatever's happening, happens, but you can just watch it. You don't have to be part of it, immersed in it, stuck in the middle of the loops, right? And they're not. And so being able to watch what's going on without judging yourself is actually an incredible healing place to be. And that's where we, when you achieve years of meditation practice, sometimes you get there once or twice a year, right? But with psychedelic medicine like ketamine, we can drop people into those states reliably. However, with one caveat, if you enter your ketamine state with resistance, meaning you're, you know, stressed out, anxious about the experience and what to expect, worried about what could happen, like I might not be the same after this, right? Which we get in a lot of new participants, analyzing the experience too much, trying to control it, trying to figure out how and why am I experiencing this right now while it's happening? You're not just present, you're just trying to figure it out or use your brain too much while it's happening to process. All of that is resistance in its own form. And what happens to our patients when they start doing that stuff? It shuts down the entire ketamine experience to the point where many people will say, I didn't notice anything.
Wow.
Like with full peak doses of ketamine, people will literally say, I didn't notice anything. And then a couple of days later, they say, oh, I'm starting to notice I'm feeling a little better because ketamine has these natural antidepressant effects. But the point is that even with powerful psychedelic medicines, it is possible, the mind is so powerful that we can literally shut down the entire experience just by overthinking it, right? And resisting it. And so that's where Apollo and tools, that's why we teach all our, before we had Apollo, we just taught everybody breath work before they go into a session. Now we have Apollo. And so people are able to just put this on in the waiting room and have like 5 to 15 minutes of calm before they go in, and then they drop in right away, right? And they require lower doses of medicine. They are able to access deeper states of mind by themselves without any extra support. And they feel so much better afterwards because they had a more relaxed and powerful experience with the medicine. It's not going to solve it for everybody, but I think that's a really interesting example, because in general, like, we don't treat people with anxiety with ketamine, because anxiety makes people, is a control issue. When people are trying to control the experience too much, they're going to get nothing out of it. So ketamine has been reserved for PTSD and depression. All of a sudden we introduce Apollo into the mix and anxious patients start to be able to respond to ketamine, right? So it's a really interesting situation. And now we're also using Apollo after MDMA therapy with MAPS in the MAPS as a add-on to the MAPS trial. So there's lots of opportunity for that. And people can use this tool as like your psychedelic sidekick in the real world to help you get into these states more effectively and transition without, you know, resistance.
I love calling it your psychedelic sidekick. That's a good name for it. That's amazing. And I'm really excited that they're kind of weaving it into the MAP studies now as well. And I'll be excited to follow that. What misconceptions do people have about Apollo? Like, what confuses them about it when people, you know, as I want to be able to explain it really well, you know, to people, like what it is. And you've done a good job, obviously, explaining what it does and how it does it. But what don't people understand, you know, about using it and about why they want it in their lives?
I think the biggest misconception about tools, I mean, there's, so first off, there's nothing like Apollo in the world right now. There is no tech. Why we devoted our lives to doing something so hard and making this tool is because there just isn't anything else out there that does what Apollo can do. Yeah. So for us, that was the major focus. And I think the biggest misconception is that because it's such a powerful technology and because it works in a similar way, it has a similar effect on us that music has, right? Like when you think about, this is actually one of the inspiring things about that also drove our discovery of Apollo, was that we were all in our research core original research team, we were all both musicians and neuroscientists and psychiatrists, psychologists. And one thing that fascinated all of us coming in was, how does music work when you have Michelle having her worst day of her life, plus favorite song randomly comes on equals Michelle having a good day again almost instantly, right?
Yeah.
And that's universal human experience. Almost everybody's had that experience. It's almost instantaneous. How the heck does that work, right? We've never had a good neuroscience explanation for it, but it's universal human experience. We should be able to figure that out. And then if you look at soothing touch, it's the same thing. Like if you're having a bad day and somebody you like gives you a hug, you almost instantly feel better.
Yeah.
And you're feeling like kind of a new person. It's not complete transformation, but it makes a huge difference. Yeah. And what I became really interested in this because I wanted to understand how music affects the body in this way, which is so powerful. And it's so powerful that it's like universal human experience, right? We all agree that music does this stuff, but we don't know how or why. And so we started to dive back into the neuroscience of it. And what became very interesting is that you know, people think that you can just get that kind of effect every time, regardless of the situation you're in. Like, I'm having a really crappy day and I'm just going to, or I'm feeling like I'm having terrible pain or headache or whatever, I'm just going to turn on my Apollo and you're instantly going to feel better. And is that possible? Sure, it is possible. There are some of those people out there, probably like 20% of our users, maybe 30%. Like, you might be one of those people. They have distress. They're just really, really having a hard time and they turn on their Apollo and they're instantly feeling better. That is not how these kinds of tools work, right? Mm. Like, you actually have to practice to get better, which means wearing this kind of stuff over time. And it's not a long time. It's like 21 days to start to see a statistically significant improvement in your sleep. That's what we're seeing from our studies. That's not that long to get more deep and REM sleep, like what both you and I are seeing, right? That's actually a rather short time. But the point is, the consistency is important. You can't just start breathing exercise today and feel good today after doing it and expect that you're going to feel good every day for the next 2 weeks because you did one breathing exercise today or one meditation or yoga today. It's not how it works. The body needs to be trained to enter these states. And so Apollo is really about giving us less time-consuming, less complicated ways to enter these states so that we can feel what it feels like and know in our hearts what it feels like to be present and mindful and safe, so that we can train ourselves over time to access those states more easily. But it does take time. The good news is it doesn't take as much time to get to your goal than it did to get to where we are right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. That's really helpful. And I wonder, just on a side note, does it matter? I always want to wear it like on my inside of my wrist. I don't know why that just feels like, I mean, I've worn it other places as well. Is there any magical place to wear it, or does it really not matter where you wear it? Just wherever feels comfortable for you.
Yeah. I mean, it's really wherever is comfortable for you, as long as mm-hmm. you can feel the vibrations. That's one of the really nice parts about Apollo. I'm wearing it on my chest for this, mm-hmm. for this interview. You can clip it on anywhere. There's a little clip that comes with it. You know, I would say the most popular locations right now from what we've heard from our users are chest and ankle being the most popular spot, especially for sleep. But the nice part is because it's activating your touch receptors in your skin, in our skin and bones, it doesn't need to be against the skin. It can literally be just anywhere on your body that you can feel it. I'm wearing an undershirt right now and it's, you know, above my shirt and it's fine and I can still feel it. So that's really nice. And it can be worn anywhere on the body, but if you wear it closer to a bone, you feel it more because Apollo is wearable base, and base transmits better through dense material, and our bones are the densest material in our body. So Apollo definitely works better through bone, but in general, as long as you can feel it, it'll work.
Okay. And I'm curious, I know you just came back from South by Southwest, and I'm sure you're tired from that. Thank you for connecting with me. I wonder, having been there, and I'm sure you're in a million and one conversations, I know you were a speaker there as well. Coming back from South by Southwest and being with all of those people and technologies and new ideas, is anything, what's sparking in your mind right now about Apollo, about the work you're doing? You know, I guess I'm asking an integration question. You know, what are you integrating from South by Southwest in relationship to, you know, to Apollo and to this work you're so passionate about?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's two things, which are the two things that I was asked to speak about, which I think are really, really interesting right now, which is, number one, a better understanding of intimacy. I gave with Lauren Taus and Dr. Greg Dillon, we did a special on psychedelics and intimacy for She Media. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talked about how intimacy itself is a psychedelic state. Like, psychedelic is not about drugs. Psychedelic is an expanded mind state. That means psyche means mind, delos means to show or to reveal. So we're really talking about revealing states that reveal our minds to us. Mm. As Freud would say, looking at the, or Carl Jung, it's looking at your subconscious, becoming aware of what's going on beneath the surface of your consciousness. And that happens to all of us in our dreams. And it happens to all of us when we're intimate with a partner or a loved one that we can trust. And so, and of course, psychedelic medicines are other molecular ways to get there, but they come from outside of us, whereas intimacy comes from within side of us. And, you know, so there's different ways to get there, but they're all helping us access similar states of being. And I think the intimacy piece is really interesting because a lot of women don't feel safe. I think it's like 70% of women or something like that don't feel safe enough with their partners to achieve climax on a regular basis or at all. And that's a tragic number. I think that it really speaks to the importance of safety in our society and the history of women being unsafe, which, because it's true that men have often taken advantage of women and created environments where women don't feel safe to let go and be vulnerable. But that vulnerability is where all the beauty of life is, right? Mm-hmm. So if we're not including sexual climax, it's like one of the most exciting parts of life for most people in their whole lives. Some people live their whole lives just to feel that moment, right? Yeah. And there are 70% of women who can't achieve that with their partners because they don't feel safe. So I think that there's a really interesting opportunity to see how the use of tools like Apollo, which have also shown early data to improve access, arousal in women and access to climax in women, by targeting the safety pathway, and then also using psychedelic therapy, can just help to amplify these safety states and make them more democratized or more accessible to everyone so that people can just feel more themselves and feel more pleasure and more joy, because pleasure and joy are healthy and normal and we should all be feeling them on a daily basis.
Yeah. And there's a new love setting. I haven't used the love setting yet. Was that kind of the intention? Was that the connection to South by Southwest? Did that have anything to do with the conversation?
No, we didn't actually talk about that much, but we did release that, and we discovered that because we were testing it for relaxation, and we found that in women, it deeply relaxes men to the point of like sleepiness. But in women, when used on the ankle, it is very inducing of sexual arousal. And it's very, we didn't know that was going to happen actually when we started working with it, but we just studied a lot of women who were using it and found that this was actually a very common response. And as we started to pull on the threads there, we realized that it was probably most likely because there was an activation of the safety pathway through the emotional cortex that was specifically helping women feel safer in intimate settings. And safer in their own bodies, which is really great because, you know, we need more of that.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Well, from a big thank you from me and all the women in the world to be able to wear the Apollo on our ankle. Yeah, that's really beautiful. That's really beautiful. We're almost out of time. So I just want to see if is there anything else we haven't talked about, anything you'd like to share about the Apollo or something that hasn't been said?
I think the other thing that's interesting to talk about, or maybe a good point to end on, is the other talk that I gave at South By, which was with the Rob Report. Anybody who wants to check this out can just you know, go to the Rob Report and look for the article on Apollo and my talk. But what was really interesting in the work that I'm doing is that we're starting to see in mental health this really interesting paradigm shift and exciting shift, where we are going from mental illness being what we think of as like a lifelong diagnosis that doesn't have a cure, to that we treat forever with medication and therapy, to something that actually is curable. And we haven't, as doctors, been able or been taught or taught that it's okay to use the cure word when discussing mental illness, because mental illness traditionally has not had a cure. And I liken this to, you know, the discovery of antibiotics prior to germ theory. You know, antibiotics were discovered in 1908. Before 1908, we did not know that germs caused illness. There were some people who theorized it, but it was not widely accepted that germs caused illness. And as soon as antibiotics were invented in 1908, infections went from something that would kill most people or result in an amputation to extremely treatable, so treatable that within just two decades, we had extended the average human life by something like 5 to 10 years. Wow. Because all of a sudden this terminal illness became fully treatable in most cases. And that was a world-changing discovery. That single discovery literally shifted the entire dynamic of the way we think about illness and infection and germs, and it transformed all of humanity for the better. I think what's interesting now in mental health and where we're sitting is that we are on the cusp of that level of discovery for mental illness, in that we could, like, with the combination of technology like Apollo and psychedelic medicine with psychotherapy, and what we're learning from both of these worlds, we're at the precipice of discovering what is comparable to antibiotics for mental illness, where people are actually going to be able to be cured. It's no longer going to be you have depression for life. It's you have depression and here's your prescription of what to do to get out of it, right? And to me, nothing could be more, and my patients, nothing could be more exciting than that. And I think that's really, I was really excited to hear that when I gave this talk at the Rob Report, everybody else who was not from a mental health background was just as, if not more, excited about it than I was. And that was really awesome. And so I think that, you know, we're moving in a really great direction in the field. And for anybody who's listening to this, who's struggling, hope is on the way.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I saw the blurb from South by Southwest. One of the blurbs said the closest thing to a cure for mental illness without pharmaceuticals. So
yep.
May it be so. May Apollo play a huge role. Thank you for just dedicating your life to healing others. I really just admire you. Deep bow.
Oh, thanks, Michelle.
Yeah,
thank you. Pleasure to be here with you. I really appreciate your work as well.
Yeah, thank you very much. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in, and we will see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Expanded States. If you enjoyed listening to our podcast, please follow us and be sure to share our show with your family and friends.